20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Hello once again, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast, your one-stop shop for all things green and gold. My name is Mike Wendland. I'm joined this week by Gage Bridgeford, and now permanently joining our little trio, Matt Freilich is going to be with us for the foreseeable future. And, well, Matt, welcome to the Forever Sunday Club, and it's good to have you, and let's talk some NFL draft again.
Let's do it, man. I mean, it was great talking the draft with you guys and getting up to that. I didn't think we would make this permanent, but, you know, it is sad to turn the page on the Janelle and Dan and Matt saga, but it's awesome to record with you guys every week. And we just have to harass Eli for making this happen. So, but it's awesome. You guys are great to chat with. I love talking to you guys during the week, pre-meetings here before we start recording and everything. And you guys' knowledge base is just making me better too. So let's get into it.
Yeah, we're glad to have you here, Matt. It was me, Mike, and Tyler for a long while, and then Tyler stepped away, and I was like, okay, who's gonna come and take that new third spot? And of all the people that we could have gotten, you're a pretty good addition.
I appreciate that.
For sure. Also, quick disclaimer, no one is social media forums or anything like that. That is not the responsibility of the Pack-A-Day Podcast or anything such forth, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Eli's a good dude.
True.
With that being said, we're going to take a deep dive into the 6th and 7th round draft picks for the Packers. I mean, they made 3 of them in those last 2 rounds, an offensive lineman, a linebacker, and a running back. All 3 guys, I think, have intriguing potential. It's going to be a lot of fun to talk about. I know, personally, Matt and I are going to have a lot of knowledge on our first one. But again, before we get started, quick check out wherever we are on podcast apps, wherever you can find us. Let us know. Give us a like, a comment. Let us know how we're doing. Just give us a look on every single place like that. Also on Twitter, at Pack-A-Day Podcast. That being said, let's jump right in with the first of the 6th-round picks by the Green Bay Packers, and that was Cole Van Landen out of Wisconsin. And again, Cole Van Landen, Green Bay native, Bayport graduate, Wisconsin Badger for about 5 years, left tackle there. And Matt, you know him probably know him pretty well, being up in that area. What do you think he's going to bring to the Green Bay Packers lineup?
Simply, he's going to bring potential. Like, that's really what it is with Cole. Like, we talked about his RAS last week. It's, I think mid-8s. And then when you switch him actually to offensive guard or tackle one way, he gets into the 9s. Regardless, like, RAS kind of is out the window at this point because we're past that. Now let's get into the actual what can he do. He can bring some, versatility as well, but I think he's a project guy. Like, there's the biggest thing that everyone has talked about, people that know the position better than I do, that he just lacks some discipline. He lacks some techniques that just, I think, can be corrected. But I think he has all the physical skills to be able to, to slide inside. I don't think he's a left tackle at the next level. I think we could all agree on that. Right tackle, potentially guard. Absolutely. Let him get in the mix. I think there's an opportunity to compete at a couple spots right now. And those 5 offensive line spots. And we'll see what he can do. I'm excited. I think it's just going to be a feel-good story. There's always one or two of those for the Packers, and this is the easy one right now to take the cake. And we'll see what he can contribute. But I really like just him as a prospect. I believe Andy talked about this on Monday, or maybe it was on one of the video versions on Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube page. Like, he at one point was projected as like a 1st or 2nd round pick, and you get him in the 6th round. It's kind of stupid. Like, that's extremely fortunate, great value. Why did he slip that far? Not sure. Maybe it was the tape that people like, doesn't have the fundamentals, doesn't have the basic technique that we want, et cetera, et cetera. But I think Van Landen will come in and at least compete for one of those spots. And to his, to help him out a little bit more, it seems that this new regime in the last couple years between LaFleur and Gutekunst like to have extra offensive linemen. They like to stack that offensive line room and activate them for the 53-man roster. So I think he's got an opportunity at least to have a chance to contribute one way or another.
Yeah, watching him, I haven't watched him nearly as much as either one of you guys have, but when I went and watched him a little bit this week, I saw a guy that's got a lot of power. I saw a guy that has, like, if you put him in run blocking sets, he's going to run over a lot of people because he's 6'5", 312, So he's not the bulkiest guy, but he's got a lot of power built into him. And he's just, he's more comfortable in run blocking sets. And when you go and play at Wisconsin, that's makes perfect sense because that's what they do there. They run the ball, they run people over. And that was a strength of Van Landen. He's got to work on his foot speed in pass sets. When you ask him to pass it in a the vertical set, he's not the quickest there, and he has a little bit of reach and wingspan issues, which can be a bit of a problem when you're talking about the offensive tackle position. But I think he ultimately kicks inside the guard, maybe puts on a little bit of weight, and just fills in there. And as you said, Matt, Green Bay and Brian Gutekunst and Matt LaFleur, they have, over the last couple of years, really focused on having a lot of active linemen on game day, and Van Landen can be one of those guys. He's probably not going to start in year one, but that's okay. When you get a guy in the sixth round, you're not expecting him to start in year one. But if you can get a guy in year one that, in the event that somebody goes down with an injury, he can step in and actually contribute for you, that's a good thing. Like, if he comes in and you just have to try and salt a game away, you're up big, a guy got hurt, and he comes in and just, you're going to run the ball with A.J. Dillon for a quarter, Van Landen can be the bruiser that goes in front of him and gives A.J. Dillon room to work. So I like the pick. I think he's going to be really natural in the run game. If he can improve his work in pass blocking, I think he's got a chance to be a really, really talented player. It's just with the way the modern NFL has been, they want long tackles who are on the younger side, who have good foot speed. Those are not three strengths of Van Landen. He just turned 23 a couple days before the draft. He is only 312 pounds, so doesn't have the natural guard conversion, and he's a little shorter in the arm. But if he can just figure out how to deal with speed in the NFL a little bit better, I think that he could be a solid player for a while.
For sure, man. You look at Van Landen's his bio on the Badgers, UWBadgers.com. They made a good point because Matt talked about how he was seen as a potential high draft pick. That was after 2018, after he started moving over to left tackle. He was the highest graded offensive tackle by Pro Football Focus with a grade of 90.4. I know him and Tyler Biadasz were the highest at their positions in college football that season. Got four letters in his time at Wisconsin, 19 starts in 45 games. The problem, though, has been injuries. He's had a lot of upper body injuries. I think one was nerve-related, and he missed some time. He missed a couple of games last season with injury. He missed a couple of games in 2019. Was rotating with John Dietzen in 2018. Dietzen, of course, not only an undrafted Packer, was rotating with him, and then Dietzen retired for a year, came back, ended up moving into guard originally. But for Van Landen, second-team All-American in 2019 from CBS, All-Big Ten, second-team academic All-Big Ten for 4 years, first-team All-Big Ten in the coaches' vote in 2020, second-team by the media. And yeah, like Gage said, he's not going to be playing left tackle. He can maybe play a right side if he is able to get his feet figured out a little bit. And he said during his post-draft press conference that he knows he has to work on his pass pro. He knows he has to work on his hand placement. But if you want him to create a gap and let the running backs run behind him, he's the perfect guy to do it. He is the prototypical Wisconsin road grading lineman. Mm-hmm. And those guys have had some pretty long careers. A guy that comes to mind again is Ricky Wagner. I think Atlanta can have that type of career. Wagner, I think, was a fifth-round pick. No one thought he could stay at tackle. They thought he was going to be too slow. He didn't have the feet. The pass protection ability to do it, but he carved out a very long career playing on the outside. I'm not sure if Van Landen's going to have that type of career, but I think the comparison could be there where he could, if he keeps the work ending, it stays healthy, that potential was there.
I have one question before we transition, or if anyone has anything, like, are his opportunities going to be a lot smaller just based off how many Packers or how many linemen the Packers have on the roster? And they drafted three last year, and they brought in Dietzen. Is it too cluttered of an offensive lineman room, do you think, for him to get some opportunities, or is it not really going to matter? The cream's going to climb to the top.
I personally don't think so. I think the fact that they're bringing so many linemen, I think, is a big thing, because you can never have too many, so they can rotate guys in with different combinations, different groupings. The fact that he has played outside in the past and in college will help. I think Royce Newman will do this. Will have a similar role. They'll put him on the right side and then move on.
Sure.
He can also be that second, third team left tackle if Yash Nijman doesn't develop like they think, and in scout teams and preseason games. But I do think, because almost all everyone they draft has been interior the past couple of years.
Yeah.
If guys can play outside, I think that's going to bode well for them, because they do need that swing tackle. And while it may be unfortunate that he got number 78 compared to the last number 78 offensive lineman that they had, or really the last two, that's not the most promising thing. But I do think that if he can play outside, that he can definitely make it and have a long career.
Jason Spriggs and who else?
Derek Sherrod.
Oh, jeez. Mike, don't put that hate on the man already. Come on.
He just did that. He doomed him. And I'm not surprised, because Mike is kind of that guy of this show. He just likes to wish bad things on good people, but he just hates.
I am always that guy.
You are that guy.
Hey, you gotta start over somehow. Maybe Cole can do it.
For sure. I guess another couple things on Van Lannen that could help him. I guess it kind of explains why he was the way he was. Why he was very highly recruited, also coming into Wisconsin. He's a four-star prospect, U.S. Army All-American Bowl, two-time All-State at Bayport. Also a track star, discus and shot put, swept the state championship in both as a junior. There's a lot of stuff there. There's a lot of pedigree with him to make it. But again, sixth round pick, 214th overall, very much a lottery ticket. I don't know if he was going to get drafted, but seeing him out there again, that's with him, the big thing is going to be the story. And you know he's going to be a very popular player in training camp in the fall. And I'm sure there will be a fair share of Van Lannen jerseys rotating around Green Bay.
Well, yeah, because everyone that had the Derek Sherrod and the Jason Spriggs jerseys, you know, which there's a plentiful of them, just easy transition. You just rip that off, put the Van Lannen on the back, and you're good to go.
I do have a Ross Verbal one, so I could probably do that.
That's legit. Also, fourth year in a row that there's there's been a player drafted out of Green Bay coming out of one of the high schools around here, which is incredible. So it's great to see that, because, you know, there's a lot of great talent out of Green Bay, but I think it just gets slept on a little bit. And Alec Ingold's talked about that quite a bit, the former Bayport fullback who is now the Raiders fullback.
And one who's actually undrafted.
Also undrafted.
As a non-Green Bay-focused resident, who are the other three that got drafted?
So we have James Morgan. Quarterback. Went to the Jets, who's from Schwabenon. Max Sharping, second-round pick for the Texans, offensive lineman.
Yep.
Khalil McKenzie, Reggie McKenzie's son, sixth round of the Chiefs. I don't think he's fared very well thus far. And then Alec Ingold's the fourth one.
Yeah, McKenzie's played a few different positions, I think.
Yeah,
okay. I knew the name Khalil McKenzie, but yep. I only knew it because he was Reggie's kid.
Exactly.
But the other ones, I was like, okay, yep, James Morgan, I know him. I think I actually had James Morgan on a fantasy roster at one point. Just like I had a super deep dynasty
Knock
league,
off.
And I'm just
no, you didn't.
It was There's a dynasty no roster. It was a dynasty
okay.
roster.
All right. Maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. In Dynasty, like, the roster was, like, over 30 people, and there's only so many players that are, like, rosterable.
Okay.
Okay, but, all right, let's go ahead and move on to our next prospect of the day, which is Isaiah McDuffie, linebacker out of Boston College.
Let's jump right in. Pick 220, Isaiah McDuffie. The numbers are there. He was a tackling machine at Boston College. And he seems to be able to guy who looks like he can be able to play a little bit in coverage, but he's also going to be a special teams, for lack of a better word, missile. Because he seems to like hitting, and he likes to get downhill. So I'm interested to see what you guys have seen from McDuffie, if you've watched any tape on him.
So McDuffie's the one I had to dive into more. Like, Cole Van Lannen, I knew about, and offensive lineman tape, as fun as it is to watch, not that great to just sit down and digest. Kylan Hill caught a couple of his games this last few years, so I had a reference point there, and I think he's a good prospect. With McDuffie, I'm like, I'm not really catching a lot of Boston College football games, to be honest. So I had to go and dive in, and like he's got good lateral movement for college. He's a sure tackler, which I think can translate into the league, and the Packers have needed that. But the thing with him is, like, I just don't know where he fits in. Like, is he going to be a linebacker? Is he going to be a hybrid safety? Like, I don't I'm not really sure what they're going to do with him. Is it just a simple replacement of like Christian Kirksey's gone, we need another body, here's McDuffie in the sixth round? Like this, to be honest, and I hope we have some sort of argument here on the podcast, like McDuffie was the one pick where I was like, eh, I could have done with someone else at that pick. Everyone else I was really, really happy with who they brought in. But McDuffie to me is just like, I don't see what his skill set translates. Another thing to mention too is, so he, if you watch his tape, like he's very quick. Like he's quicker than I expected him to be. However, I don't know if that translates into the league. Like I got a lot of Jake Ryan, AJ Hawk, those types where he's like Blake Martinez, like tackling, like meeting a guy at the edge and kind of tackling from behind, where I don't know if that works from the speed transition from college to the NFL. So that's my only concern. And also if you look at like his 40 time and I think his 20 yard split are like really, really good, but his short, like three cone drill and whatnot are horrendous. Like, and I think that's a problem and a concern because like you want him in small areas to be able to be explosive. And I don't know if he's got that. So maybe he'll come in and be a special teams missile as Mike mentioned, but to be honest, I'm not holding my breath on Isaiah McDuffie contributing at all.
Yeah. Like you said, his three cone drill, 24th percentile, 20 yard shuttle, 23rd percentile, 40 yard dash was in the 76th percentile, 20 yard split in the 20th percentile. And his explosiveness doesn't make a lot of sense. His vertical jump was only at the 30th percentile, but his broad jump was in the 72nd. Generally, if someone tests well on one of those, they test well on the other one. So it throws me off when someone tests almost just like terribly on one and well on the other one. But The McDuffie stuff, I do agree. He is not super quick in lateral areas, but he looks better on tape in terms of like pass coverage. He's got fluid pedal. He's got good lateral mobility. He's springy in directions. It's going to take time for him to excel in that area. He's not a good run defender. That's not his thing. If anything, you're bringing him in, as Mike said, he's going to be special teams guy. And then you hope that he can develop into a coverage player with Kamal Martin and Chris Barnes being your primary run defending linebackers. So That's going to be what McDuffie does. He's not going to be a run defending guy. That's just, it's not his thing. That was never his strength. I've done a little bit of my own work in terms of like watching him. And then I've read some other reports on people who watched him more in depth than I have. And run defending just wasn't his thing. He's more of a pass coverage guy. It's going to take time because he's got to work on his processing. That's just not his thing right now. He's really raw, and it makes sense. The guy went in the sixth round. No duh. He's going to be a raw player that's going to need time to develop. So I think that he has the potential to become a strong special teamer and maybe an occasional like coverage linebacker on third downs, but I'm not holding my breath yet. It's going to take a little bit of time before I'm like, yeah, no, this guy is ready to be a regular contributor for a defense that has championship aspirations.
For sure. And a couple things that do go in his favor. He's only 21. He's still young. He was one of the younger guys they drafted this year. And playing against some of those passing offenses in the ACC will help. Like playing Clemson for multiple years, playing led North Carolina offense. He had 12 tackles against North Carolina this past year, including a sack. He had 16 tackles against Notre Dame back in November, 10 against Clemson, including a tackle for loss. So he's put up good numbers again against top tier competition. He had a quarterback hit against Notre Dame, so he brought Ian Book down to the ground, which could be a future if the Packers and Saints play going in a few years. But I now that inside linebacker room is going to be very, very interesting because you have Barnes and Martin, who you think are locks for the roster. Those guys aren't going anywhere. But then you have McDuffie, Ty Summers, Oren Burks. There's going to be a lot going on there, and special teams will be the factor. And the Packers released a video yesterday, their Packers one-on-one series, and Larry McCarron was talking with Goody, and he talked about they drafted partly for special teams. They're expecting Shamar John Charles to do special teams. Kylan Hill said he's willing to do special team stuff. McDuffie, they really look at him as being a special teams guy who's going to get downhill and cause havoc. Because if you just have him run a straight line and go hit the returner, I think he can do that very well at his size and at his ability. And I think he's kind of said as much as well. He knows he's got to take the time and go make the plays and work his way up from special teams like a lot of his predecessors have. But it's interesting. Yeah, his lateral movement isn't the greatest, but like H said, he did seem fluid.
Yeah,
in what he does, which is something. So you can build up some of the lateral mobility through gym work, through on-field work, but fluidity is something that you don't isn't something you can really coach up. You either have it or you don't. And so, and if he can be fairly consistent moving around in space on the field, that bodes well for his future.
I agree.
So yeah, one more player to talk about. Now we're going to travel back to the SEC. Their final pick, 256 in the 7th round, running back Kylan Hill from Mississippi State. Of course, Hill probably best known for his work off the field and his work getting the Mississippi flag changed. Very good job for him. Kudos to him for that. And yes, really kind of putting his foot down on that and making that happen. That I think it's a very big character thing for this team bringing in. I know the Packers made a very conscientious effort to draft high character guys. They always have, and I think Hill's going to be a good part of that. He won the Best Student Athlete in Mississippi Award, the Connerly Trophy in 2019. First team All-SEC by the Associated Press in 2019. Twice on the PFF National Team of the Week in 2019. Academic Honor Roll, Offensive Player of the Week, and National Player of the Team of the Week in 2018 against Kansas State. He was a preseason watchlist for the Doak Walker Award going into last season. Also the Maxwell Award preseason watchlist, until Mike Leach became their coach. And this is a very intriguing pick. I mean, Hill's got all the tools he wants, and I see a little bit of Jamal Williams in him.
I mean, I don't think that's a bad comparison. I like Kylan Hill, like straight up. Like I was like 7th round pick, see what you can get, and like a guy that can come in and contribute. I thought they needed to get a running back. I love the value in the 7th round. As you mentioned, great off the field stuff, academically solid, and the Packers always look for guys like that are intelligent, have interests outside of football, and are, you know, can be an asset to this community of Green Bay. So he's got banged up a little bit a couple times, but he's a running back. Like that's going to happen. I'm not too concerned about that at all. I guess the one concern is like, why was he, and the easy answer is like what Mike's kind of mentioning, like when the new coach came in, it's like, well, did it just not fit schematically or what? I mean, I feel like players play, coaches coach. I don't know why he couldn't have at least contributed that way. But overall, I'm excited to see what he can do. I think there was a huge need there with Jamal Williams leaving. I'm the biggest Dexter Williams hater, as I've previously mentioned on this podcast, so I don't see him contributing. Pat Chick Taylor's a nice prospect. We'll see what he does. But really, I think Kylan Hill has an opportunity to be on the active roster, to be honest, on game day. I think he could come in and be a spell running back. He's decent in pass protection. He can catch. Like I'm fairly confident Kylan Hill will make this team. I think there's a lack of talent at that running back position outside of obviously the two-headed monster, AJ Dillon and Aaron Jones. But I like Hill. From what I saw when I watched his games this year, to watching tape, to hearing other people talk about him, I feel like a lot of people are optimistic about it. So that's only convincing me more that he can contribute.
A quick note on, so you said, why wasn't he like a scheme fit, or what was the issue? Why didn't Hill get as much work? It simply comes down to it's the scheme. Scheme for like the air raid offense under Mike Leach is not running back friendly. It never has been. It never will be. There's a reason. Like Max Borgie was the running back at Washington State, and he could never get anything consistently going, especially in the passing game, because everyone's like, oh, this guy can be. He could be Christian McCaffrey, but he could never do that because the air raid didn't design passing work for him. Same thing goes for Kylan Hill. There was not work designed for him. He would line up as a receiver and just nothing would get designed for him at all. Everything was designed to go to receivers and down the field. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. The thing with Hill was the Mike Leach hiring was the worst possible thing for him. When Leach was announced there, everyone was like, well, Kylan Hill's stock is going to go immediately down. And sure enough, that's what happened. Kylan Hill is one of the top probably six or seven running back prospects entering the summer last year, and then he just never really got to build on any of that. Mike, when you made the Jamal Williams comp, I was kind of like, I don't know. I didn't necessarily think if I saw that. And then as I thought about it a little more, I was like, okay, I can kind of see it because he's not an elite burst guy. That's not what he does. He can do a little bit of everything for you, kind of a jack of all trades, master of none type. Granted, Jamal Williams was a master of pass blocking. We all know that. Some of like his athletic comps, Kareem Hunt, J.K. Dobbins, Damian Harris, DJ Dallas, Spencer Ware, a couple of guys who have either made impacts in the league or are on rosters and with our position to make impacts. I think Kylin Hill, as your seventh-round pick, as your third running back, or battle for the third running back, there are definitely a lot worse players that you can have there. He's got decent vision. When he sees the hole, he's going. He's not going to dance around again like Jamal. So the more I think about it, he's got good contact balance. He's going to be able to, like, I've seen most people say that his ideal role is as a number two in a committee. And right now, he wouldn't even be required to be anything other than the third best running back in that room. So you can do a lot worse on day three. Like I've said, is on day three, I don't care about draft positioning. I don't care what you're taking. Just if you're throwing darts, throw a dart that you think can hit. And I think Kylin Hill is at least good enough to be on a roster. While he may never be a stud running back for you, he can always give you a decent level of play when he's on the field.
For sure, and I think one thing that'll help him, the one thing that may have helped him with the Mike Leach thing was he had 23 catches in three games last year in that system. He had 23 catches, 237 yards, and a touchdown. So he showed that he's a threat as a receiver under Mike Leach, which if there's any benefit to that, it'd be that for running backs, if they can show that they can be weapons out of the backfield.
One thing to mention, too.
This game, and... Sorry, go ahead, Matt.
No, I was just going to say, I want to get this stat out here before I forget it. One thing to mention, too, with him, and it's if you've looked any further, 25 games he's played, one fumble. That's I love that. That speaks volumes, and I think that's phenomenal. So go ahead. I don't mean to interrupt you more.
I'll say the one game I'd recommend is 2019 tape against Arkansas. Though that game was, he was crazy in that game. 21 carries, 234 yards, and three touchdowns with a long of 62. Also had a catch in that game. He was on the national he was on the national team for player of the week that week. That he had 1,350 yards rushing in a 7-yard game against Louisiana, also known as Louisiana Lafayette, and Elijah Mitchell had 197 there, 153 against Abilene Christian, 150 against Texas A&M. Like he put up some pretty good numbers against only the one fumble. That's a big thing. It also goes back to my Jamal Williams comment because Jamal never drops a football or fumbles, which I'm not sure he'll ever have that happen, which is a great thing to have. But with Hill, he's going to do a little bit of everything if they need him to. I'm sure he's going to come in, play some special teams, maybe be a lead blocker on the kick return team. He can come in, be that third back. Use him on some passing downs. Use him as a spell for A.J. Dillon Jones. Him and Dillon in the backfield and Jones in the slot with Amari Rodgers. That'd be because I think all of them can be different weapons and different styles.
Absolutely. Which do you guys have a preference on? Who do you think? I mean, maybe not a preference. Who do you think realistically has a shot at being on the 53-man roster? All of them? None of them? What are our thoughts?
I think the one with the best chance is McDuffie, and I think he's the one that we talked the least highly about today, and it sounds weird for me to say that, but he's also the guy that's going to the position with the least depth. Like he's going to go play linebacker. We already talked about earlier that Christian Kirksey was no longer on the team. You have Kylin Hill, who's going to a depth or a running back room that has obviously Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon ahead of him. And then we talked about Patrick Taylor and then Dexter Williams, a.k.a. Matt Frelick, his favorite player of all time.
Hate him.
And then you have Cole Van Lannen, who we talked about. Green Bay drafted three linemen last year. And they also still have Yosh Nijman on the roster from the 2019 draft. You had Josh Myers and Royce Newman get drafted ahead of Van Lannen, as well as John Dietzen, who was signed to the roster. So there are a lot of guys at interior or on the offensive line, but I think Van Lannen's in a crowded room. Kylan Hill's in a crowded room. McDuffie is going to a room where it's Chris Barnes, Kamal Martin, Oren Burks, Ty Summers, who Oren Burks, I'm not convinced, is going to make the roster. And Ty Summers, special teams guy. So I think, if anything, Isaiah McDuffie takes the Oren Burks spot. I like Oren Burks. He's just never been able to put it together. So I think that McDuffie could take his spot on the roster, and that's what we can end up seeing happening. So for me, if I'm picking one guy that can make the 53-man, Isaiah McDuffie is the one that I would say I think I had the most confidence in him. I don't necessarily think he's the best player between the three players we talked about today, but just looking at the way the roster is currently constructed, it's where I'm at.
Yeah, I personally go, I think Kylan Hill's probably the most likely to be on the 53, just because you talk about the depth of that room. Patrick Taylor's still unproven. I like what his potential, and hearing him talk with Andy on YouTube a couple weeks ago, I thought was really, really enlightening on what he can bring. Because he was a key part of a very deep Memphis backfield when he was in college there. He was a very key part of that, with now, I think, three NFL players that were in that backfield his last season. That's, you can't overlook that. But I think Hill's got the inside track to that third spot already. I think the skill set's there. McDuffie's interesting because Oren Burks, there's talk about moving him as like a hybrid outside-inside guy, because he showed a little bit to be able to come out, play outside a little bit, and he is a core special teamer, same with Ty Summers. But so they have three guys who can really be key special teams guys, and plus Kamal Martin, who we've seen him make some fun special teams plays. I think there's that there. Van Landen's got a tough road.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like Gage said, he's got all the draft picks from the past few years, and guys like Yoshin Nijman, obviously Lucas Patrick coming back for another year. Another guy that the guys will discuss tomorrow in their deep dive for the undrafted guys is Gage's favorite Hoosier, Coy Kronk, who I know the team seems to be pretty high on, who had some pretty good years for Indiana before going to Iowa for his final season. Another offensive line prospect to keep an eye on. That competition during camp at the offensive line is going to be so much fun to watch. Van Landen's probably got the toughest road,
mm-hmm.
and I think Hill's probably got the easiest, but all three eventually probably will find a way onto the 53. If anyone doesn't, it'd be Van Landen, but I can't see him going to another team. He's at very least going to be on the practice squad this for 1 year and bulk up a little bit, get in the gym a little other year to move up as guys start to move on, because this could be the final year for a couple of guys that are mainstays on this offensive line.
Yeah, I don't really have one, to be honest. I have no idea. I could be convinced either way on all three guys. If I really, really had to force my hand, I would say Kylan Hill, but I could easily make an argument for everyone.
Sure. So as we wrap things up, of course, stay tuned tomorrow as the group takes a look at the undrafted guys, a lot of which came from the Big Ten and a lot of which came from Iowa, including Gage's favorite Hoosier, Coy Kronk, and Jack Heflin, Carlos Kemp, and John Dietzen, and Jack. And there's a lot of guys. There's 7 or 8 guys to break down that they will do tomorrow for you guys. But as you wrap things up, Matt, where can people find you?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter still, at @Matt_Frey_. That's at @MATT_FRA_. That's basically where you'll find all the content I'm a part of. Game on Wisconsin, Pack-A-Day, anything marketing related for my full-time job. But right now I'm super pumped to get past the draft and kind of transition, get to that next benchmark, which is May 12th, the schedule to come out. So excited for that. We kind of already know the opponents and where we're going to play them, but just to get everything solidified is fantastic. But as we continue through the summer, I'm pretty jazzed to be having some other content coming out too. So look forward to that before September, but make sure you're following us on all of our pages for Pack-A-Day. Make sure you're subscribed. Check out Andy's YouTube page. I think he's probably broke some record for starting a YouTube page and having so much success, but more power to him. But Gage, where can everyone find your content, bud?
As usual, you can find me on Twitter at @GBridgefordNFL. That's where all of my stuff is. Still doing some writing work for RotoBaller, Dynasty Nerds, Denver Stiffs. Obviously, the Denver Nuggets coverage is heating up with the playoffs getting ready to be here. We're doing some RotoBaller. I know that we're doing a lot of fantasy breakdowns of player landing spots and who did, like, player stock up and down, just like by guys not getting drafted or not guys getting drafted to rooms that were seen as, ooh, man, I should definitely draft this guy versus now, like, Eric Ebron. Everyone thought, oh, that's a guy that's going to be another solid fantasy tight end, and then they drafted Pat Freiermuth in the second round. So, but that's where you can find all my work. It's easiest to find it just on my Twitter, because otherwise you guys are going to be scrambling around to too many different websites.
For sure. And of course, you can find me on Twitter at Mike Wendlandt, all one word, WENDLANDT. You can find my work mostly on ZaleskiSports.com. That's ZALESKI Sports.com. I do a lot of broadcasting. I got 3 baseball and softball games in the high school scene this week all over central and north central Wisconsin, covering Neenah, Pacelli, Marshfield, so on and so forth, places like that. So look for me on that way. Also, tennis, track and field, all that kind of stuff. I cover a variety of sports for them, and it's a lot of fun. So follow me there. Of course, follow us on at Packaday Podcast on Twitter. Follow the YouTube channel. Andy's been doing incredible work there, getting a couple of player interviews, talking a lot of stuff, and he's been exceptional down there. And check out the guys tomorrow as they break down the undrafted free agent class. So for that being said, we'll wrap things up. For Matt Freilich and for Gage Bridgeford, this is Mike Wendlandt saying so long, everybody, everyone. Stay safe, always carry the G, and go Pack, go.